Today's episode is brought to you by Progressive, where drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. Quote now at progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Looking to get out of the ads and back to the story? Fable and Folly Plus is a new way to support the creators you love. The podcast you're listening to right now, and more than 60 others, can be heard ad-free for as little as $4 a month by visiting fableandfolly.com/plus. And now, you'll start to see Fable and Folly Network shows are offering bonus content to all existing and new supporters. Find exclusive new episodes from shows like Where the Stars Fell, The Call of Cthulhu Mystery Program, and Civilized. Plus, early access to new episodes of Midnight Burger, all still entirely ad-free. The Fable and Folly Network supports creators of exceptional audio stories, including the one you're listening to right now. If you love our shows, we want to hear from you. Complete our listener survey at fableandfolly.com/survey. This will help us learn more about you, what you like, what you'd like to hear more of, and how we can maintain an inclusive, safe atmosphere. As a thank you for your participation, we have extras and behind-the-scenes content from your favorite shows. Fans make the network what it is. Thanks for listening, and we can't wait to hear from you. Find our listener survey at fableandfolly.com/survey today.
Hi, I'm Ryan LaPlante, and I'm one of the crazy founders of Dumb Dumbs and Dice, the podcast production company that's making the podcast you're listening to right now. Now, we're clearly busy. We're producing 5 weekly podcasts and a 6th event podcast, but we want to take this time to invite you to become a part of our company and a part of our Patreon at patreon.com/dumbdumbdice. You can get access to our Discord, access to exclusive DM and character chats. You can get the chance to name characters in our shows and vote on the way their stories will progress. You can even become a recurring NPC and hear yourself interacting with our characters each week through the voice of Tom. You can become a patron for as little as $1, and there's great value for you at even that level. So please, join the Dumb Dumbs and Dice family and help us make even more content in a way that you are guaranteed to love. That's patreon.com/dumbdumbdice. DUMBDUMBDICE. So let's do something dumb together, and thanks for listening.
Welcome back, children of the night, to Blood and Syrup, a Vampire the Masquerade live play podcast. I am your host, Count Vlad von Lestat, drinker of blood, keeper of the chronicle, and all around the spooky dude! Ha ha ha! This week, we conclude our mini-series, Blood and Syrup, the Untold Messy Successes, and we are happy to announce that our regular chronicle will resume next week. But now, we head down south, where Detective Everett Fry is tracking a killer. One final case before he becomes the very thing he's hunting. Abandon hope, all ye who listen here.
So long before he arrived in the cold foreign climate of Montreal, Everett Fry was a cop. And there are many cases in a cop's career. Some of them are memorable, some of them are regrettable, but usually there's only one or two in a lifetime that really leave a mark as the case, the time. Your old partner, Harvey Grimm, used to talk about what case that was for him, and it's part of the reason he took the early retirement package when it was offered. And for you, Everett, that one case, the case that you thought would really be kind of, when people told the tale of Everett Fry, the thing they would talk about most, was a string of seemingly unrelated murders that you'd been tracking across Texas, but that you noticed seemed to be somewhat centered around Houston. And the weird thing was there was the details of all the crimes were different, the victim profiles were all different, but the common factor was there was a hell of a lot of blood. And something about that just didn't sit right with you each and every time it happened. And each and every time it seemingly went away. A lot of these crimes went unsolved, and it was the kind of thing that just whenever you could, you'd pick away at. And even though at times you felt kind of like you were going mad because no one else seemed to be willing to investigate this thing that you were really circling, for you, you were certain there was something bigger behind all of this. And unfortunately, that's what got you into trouble. So we open on a particularly strange string of murders that the department's been tracking for a while, but that you've been assigned. In extraordinary circumstance, your new partner has not yet arrived. He's coming down from somewhere up north. You don't know much about him. But unfortunately, justice waits for no man. And so you have been put on the case of Samuel Darlington, a.k.a. Yosemite the Stash Sam. Darlington is a known psychopath who has managed to evade the law on multiple occasions. But his MO is tricking tourists into believing that he runs essentially like a dude ranch. He shows up in the full 10-gallon hat, giant mustache, spurs, boots, leathers, the whole shebang on a horse, and convinces Yankees to come see the authentic Texas experience. Of course, shortly thereafter, those hapless tourists end up dead in increasingly bloody ways. He's a known serial killer, but because of the ridiculousness of his disguise, he's often able to just disappear. No one knows what he like.
Sorry, Tom. It's coming through real bad right now. Sorry. Okay, looks like you're back now that you're now that I've interrupted you. I'm sorry.
Cool. When did you lose me?
Tourists ending up dead.
Cool. So tourists have been showing up dead, drained of blood. Increasingly gruesome encounters. The problem is no one knows for certain what Samuel Darlington looks like now. At best, they have some photos of him kind of circa when he was in high school, but he's in his 50s now, and there aren't any known pictures of him other than what one or two lone survivors have described, which literally sounds like the cartoon character Yosemite Sam if he was 6 foot something tall. So it's clear he's wearing a disguise. It's clear that when he murders, he wears the disguise, but unfortunately it means that no one has any leads on this man. No one, except for you. So you've managed to track Samuel Darlington through a number of kind of under-the-table deals with some less than entirely respectable criminal informants. To a large ranch that's just kind of out in the country, massive estate, and unfortunately very difficult to approach. So where we begin tonight, you are in your battered car, having again ignored conventional wisdom to inform the rest of the department where you were going or to wait for backup, realizing that this might be your only chance to get him because currently there no one knows. You've always been worried there might be a leak within the department.
Right, yeah. Corruption of some kind, yeah.
Yeah, or even just loose lips. People have social media accounts. There's all sorts of shit you don't really buy into, but the risk, the flight risk is
right,
huge.
Okay.
So you're standing outside this ranch. What do you think you've brought with you on this mission?
What time is it?
It's late afternoon, early evening. The sun is still up, but low in the sky.
Okay. I think in my car, I probably have like a case working kit. So I've got a notepad, I've got a flashlight, I've got some baggies, I've got some gloves, that kind of thing. In addition to that, I'll have my service pistol with me as well. Because this is kind of off the book investigating, this guy's been in the wind for a long, long time.
Yeah, basically, the intel you've received is that someone using a clearly fake name rented a massive ranch and its accoutrements for an event. Based on the pathology you've been studying, this definitely seems like a stash murder site. So your concern is, if he gets word, he could just abandon this. Mm-hmm. But this might be your only chance to either catch him in the act or to collect evidence on him from a site that he's clearly about to operate out of. But if you think about it in kind of Dexter terms, it's like you're aware that this is likely going to be a kill site. You haven't been able to track him. You don't know if he's already there, if there are victims there, or if he's going to get victims. But what you do know is the estate has been rented for one night. So whatever he's going to do, going down today.
In that case, I will bring a crowbar as well for a little breaking and entering if I need to. And I will have to hope that it doesn't come up in the investigation. And if it does, that I have powerful enough friends on the force in the right places to help me out. So, cool. I'm going to bring some break-in tools.
Forgive me, just for visual sake, are you a 9mm guy or are you a revolver guy?
I believe it's a 9mm. Yeah.
Okay.
Cool. Oh, man, we probably talked about this. Oh, Tom, I'm sorry.
That's okay.
It might actually be a revolver.
In my head, it's been a revolver the whole time.
Yeah.
Because I've always kind of imagined you as a 1940s noir detective.
Yeah, yeah. We'll say revolver. I think it actually is a revolver.
Okay, so how about this? Your service pistol is a 9mm.
Oh, and I have a personal weapon.
Your personal weapon, yeah, yeah.
So we're covered for the episodes that we've forgotten about where I do fire my gun.
Because I've always imagined you, Everett, as a bit more of a classic weapon guy. And I mean, as two Metal Gear Solid nerds, I've never forgotten, at that point, just Ocelot being like, oh, I'm using my 9mm. Oh, no, it jammed. And then Snake being like, you need a revolver.
That's right.
You hit six shots, it can't jam.
You tend to twist your elbow to absorb the impact. That's more of a revolver technique.
And then you just start juggling, as all gunsmiths do.
It's the natural progression, yeah.
Of course, yeah. But in any case, so you've got both weapons. Using your revolver in this instance would be real, real problem. Oh, I mean, maybe not that problematic if you're in a state that believes in gun laws a bit more. Nevertheless, as a cop, like, you have a service weapon. That's the one you're supposed to use. But I think you've always trusted your revolver a bit more. With Harvey's voice in the back of your head, like, tisking for coming alone, you observe the ranch. So, Tyler, can you please go ahead and roll me a, let's say, I don't know, like an intelligence or a composure with investigation, please.
Are you looking for that investigation?
I am, yes.
Okay, so 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 is my total die count. And one of those will be hunger.
Yeah, consider your hunger at 1, but it's more like a thirst for justice.
Okay, so these ones will all be fine. 2, 4, 6, and then I'll roll 2 more, one of those being a hunger die.
Sure.
Oh, boy. Actually, zeros are good because they're tens on this.
That is correct.
Okay.
Love them zeros.
Actually, this is a bad roll. So that's 2 fails.
Mm-hmm.
1 critical success. One regular success. A four is a failure. A 5 is a success?
Is a failure.
Failure, okay.
6 to 10 is good.
So that's bad. I'll roll 2 more. And the black one's going to be hunger die. That is a failure on a critical fail on the hunger die. So that's 3 ones, one of them being a hunger die. And the other one's a fail too. Oh my god. Out of 8 dice, 2 of them were above 5.
All right, so with your feral failure. Everett, you spend a long time staring at this place, and the thing they never like really depict properly in any cop show is how boring it can be.
Mm-hmm.
But you're pretty sure that the stash isn't responsible for all of the murders that you've been tracking, but he's definitely connected. And this is the first time you've had a solid enough lead. You've had so many dead ends that eventually, despite not having cased the joint long enough, you slip over the fence and make your way up towards the ranch house. You've got your kind of like go bag over your shoulder. You've got both your pistols. You've got your crowbar kind of up your sleeve. And you make your way quickly up towards the ranch. So where would you like to begin your investigation? You can see there's sort of stables around the side. There's the massive mansion itself. Those are kind of your two major...
I guess I'll start with the stables because I imagine the mansion to be more insulated.
Absolutely,
basically.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
You know, if I'm farting around in the bushes outside the mansion, someone from the stables might hear me or something like that. Mm-hmm. So clear the stables first is what cool. I'd like to do.
So you make your way to the stables and you can see that there are the stables are fairly large. There's only three horses in it right now.
All
three have... look like they've been kind of recently saddled up. They're clearly very well kept. That said, there's a sort of a stench in the air I think have been on enough cases that it definitely smells like a corpse.
Oh, okay. I will enter the stables then, and I want to take out my flashlight.
Cool. So you enter, and your light kind of reflects off the... sort of like obsidian eyes of the horses that kind of stare you down as you make your way in. At the back, you can see there's kind of a bunch of hay that's been sort of piled. And even from here, you can see red soaking through it. As you move in, you can see a corpse that fits the MO that you've encountered time and time again. Throat ripped open, drained of blood. Looks to be sort of classic tourist getup, so like comfortable airplane khakis, like a backpack. And as you look around, you can actually see there's some discarded luggage nearby as well, but the luggage is far too much for one person.
Oh no. All right, let's try that again. Oh no.
There you go.
Yeah, there he is. All right.
Dutch.
Yeah, exactly. You're so all one or two right words. Boy. Yeah.
Come on.
Okay. I don't want to touch him. Mm-hmm. Crime scene now. This is officially a crime scene.
Mm-hmm.
I should call it in, but yes. I think we'll take that bestial failure into consideration here and be like, no, I got to see this through. And so I'm making it up my way up to the mansion.
Cool. So you make your way up to the mansion. You can see that as you approach, you can hear there's like, it seems to be almost like a cartoonishly bad Wild West soundtrack warbling off a record player. So it's the full like, like it sounds like the underscore of a Looney Tunes cartoon.
Okay.
Off a warped record kind of in a large sitting room. You can see that this place is essentially like, think like a ranch you could rent if you were very rich and liked Airbnb a lot. So it's very well appointed. It's very fancy. You can see this record player is kind of playing in a large sitting room. You can see that there seems the... sort of like as you're looking in the window, you can see that there seems to have been a some kind of altercation. A couple of the chairs have been knocked over. One of the tables is broken, like the sort of glass coffee table in the middle is broken. Otherwise, the place looks immaculate.
Sorry, the coffee table is broken.
Yes,
like
yeah,
glass coffee.
Like
okay.
Someone went through it, kind of okay. Broken. But looking around, otherwise the place looks immaculate. Like the kitchen, all the lights are on. But like it literally looks like, I think to your sort of trained eye, people came in, went to this room, something went down, and then went on to whatever the next thing was. It doesn't look like people have been living here or staying here for very long.
Hello again, children of the night. Sometimes the darkness gets too dark and affects the mortal technology. Such was the case during our recording, which meant we had to stop for the night and pick up some time later. Please, enjoy the rest of the adventure after this brief commercial message. Patreon.
Thanks for supporting the Fable and Folly Network. Here's another show we know you'll love.
Greetings, I'm Bernard.
And I'm Magenta. You might know us from such hit podcasts as Madame Magenta, Sonus Mystica,
Horror Anthology Magenta Presents,
or Season 3 of Mockery Manor.
We're everywhere.
And we're spreading faster than an STD in an old folks' home, because now we have a brand new podcast. Wham!
Wham! It's a fun acronym that stands for We Have a Movie.
Oh, it's not just an acronym, Bernard.
It's not?
It's a chat podcast where we invent smash hit Hollywood movies based on popular toys.
If you like the Barbie movie and you want to see similar treatments of your favourite childhood toys, I'll wager you'll like Wham! With episodes on Polly Pocket, Rubik's Cube, Game Boy, Strawberry Shortcake,
Furby, Connect Four, and lots of other nostalgia bait. But it's not just for adults who still like toys. It's a podcast for anyone who loves Hollywood tropes and comedy.
And quantum mechanics.
And BDSM.
Wham! Has something for everyone, but is still specifically about movies.
That's Wham! W-H-A-M. You know, like when Batman punches someone.
Yes.
Adam West. That Batman.
Exactly.
Not the Christopher Nolan one.
No.
Download it anywhere you listen to podcasts. That's what the world needs, another movie podcast.
Was that clear? Maybe I shouldn't have mentioned quantum mechanics.
Hi there, I'm Tom McGee, and I love stories. And odds are, if you're listening to our shows, you do too. So, if you're wondering how you can help support our storytelling and world building and these wonderful characters and their sometimes ridiculous journeys, you can head on over to patreon.com/dumdumdice. There you'll find a variety of different levels and different perks, starting from as low as a dollar, which gets you into our Patreon-only Discord, where you can talk about the latest episodes, all the twists and turns, and just generally hang out with some truly lovely people. There's a whole variety of levels with everything from advanced episodes, ad-free feeds, to, of course, at our $25 level, getting to create your very own character who appears in some of our shows and sometimes becomes a long-running friend or foe of our characters. So, if you want to get involved, if you want to help us tell more of these stories, then head on over to patreon.com/dumdumdice. That's DUMBDUMBDICE. And help us create more of these fun adventures together.
Hey, friends. It's Ryan, but like regular Ryan, as himself, talking about Dumb Dumbs and Dice. Yes, I'm one of the people behind this show. Obviously, you're listening to the show. You're loving this show. Somebody's doing great. Probably not me, but like Tom, he does really good work. Tyler does really good work. Third person also does really good work. I don't know what show this is on. But the important thing is that you can support the show and join the show at
patreon.com/dumdumdice.
That's right. That address that I totally just said. Go there, join Dum Dums and Dice, support the show. It's going to be great.
Everett, having heard the sort of warbling, weirdly caricature-y old West music coming off what seems to be a record player, if you're not entirely mistaken, from inside the ranch, you make your way up to the door. So, as a detective, you've seen some bad shit in your day, but you're still haunted by what you saw in the stables. There's something about these sorts of crimes, and you've been watching these crimes for a while, but something about these kind of real vicious, bloodletting crimes that has haunted you in a way that few other crimes have. And even though this is just one piece of a larger puzzle, for the first time, you're feeling real momentum on it. So it's with a sense of apprehension, but also to some extent excitement, I think, that you approach the door. How would you enter? Do you think you're like a boot the door in kind of guy? Is it a test the knob? What's the kind of?
It would be a stealthy entrance as best as possible. Yeah.
Okay. So if you please could go ahead and roll me Let's go with, I guess, a streetwise. Oh, no, there is stealth. Straight up stealth. Okay, so let's go with stealth, and I think I'll say dexterity on this one so that it really is like a can you turn the knob as quietly as you hope, feeling for the lock pins, all that sort of shit.
Yeah. And just to reconfirm, I believe I have one hunger die, right?
That is correct. Using yes. Like which in this case is like a stress die.
Yeah.
A stress die, yeah.
Okay. That is one success and also a... Oh, sorry, two successes. I forgot that zero is a 10 on this.
Yeah.
So one critical success and one regular success.
Oh, fantastic. Okay, yeah. So you go to test the doorknob and you're happy to see that it turns cleanly. There's no sound, there's no scraping, and more importantly, there's no lock that's been engaged. You can tell that, again, since this is a rental place, almost in like an Airbnb sense, the odds of this being just a very well-kept, barely lived-in place are pretty high. So luckily... Mm-hmm. There's none of the wear and tear on a door like this that would make noise. And also, clearly, the stash was not thinking that he'd have any visitors this evening. So the door opens soundlessly to your immense relief, and you make your way in. Immediately, you kind of get that that sense whenever you enter somewhere that's truly abandoned, that there's no one on this floor. Like you can tell, like there's dead silence aside from the record, but you get that feeling where you kind of walk in and, you know, you don't hear like clattering in the kitchen or bustle. Yeah. There's no hustle and or bustle.
I like that. I like that description of a guy who's running a game being like, I can't have my players checking every fucking room. Just like you get the sense that the first floor is clear.
Yep. I mean, you're welcome to explore, but there are no secret areas on this floor. I will say there are things you can and perhaps should investigate on this floor, but in terms of what you assume the situation to be, you're guessing that there's one potential victim and the stash himself.
Mm-hmm.
Looking around just kind of from the entry hallway, you can see again that in the living room there do seem to be three glasses that have been set out. You can see a mostly empty bottle of tequila, some limes, some salt, and around it some very fancy kind of beer steins.
Wow. Okay.
One of which is mostly untouched, I should say. There's a lot of beer in it.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I want to go check out the source of this Western music.
Yeah, absolutely. So you make your way into this sort of well-lit large room. What I'm thinking of, Tyler, and like, I'm sure there's a parallel that we'll be able to find collectively from pop culture. Have you seen Game Night? This is a weird pull, but bear with me.
Yeah, I love Game Night. That turned out to be a really good
It's
movie.
A fantastic film. Yeah, much better than expected. I was very much expecting to hate it, and I fell in love with it. So Jeremy Renner's... is it Renner? It's Renner who plays the shitty brother, right? Who plays the shitty older brother?
The dad from...
Friday Night Lights. Yeah. Coach. So Coach has like a big living room with like a beautiful big square table in the middle. One of those like massive fucking couches that can seat like 14 people. There's kind of like one of those fancy fireplaces. It's that kind of space. Mm-hmm. In terms of those of you listening and watching. Breaking Bad, it's like the fancy rich people who fucked Walt out of his cut of the business. It's their living room. It's just one of those like massive, we're here to entertain. If you were renting this for an Airbnb, it'd be you and 21 of your friends. You'd say there's only 14, so you could get a discount. You'd invariably get drunk and trash the place kind of room. Mm-hmm. Big bay windows that you looked in before. So that's
a fairly modern looking home.
It's a very modern, yes. It's what I kind of meant by like modern dude ranch is it is honestly, in terms of the stash's MO, the perfect place to lure people like this, because this is what they're expecting.
Got it.
It's people who are like, I want the camping experience, but I don't want to rough it. Like, my friend's aunt has glamping. A place like this that was just like, yeah, glamping. There's literally like a 4-story mansion in the middle of cottage country on a lake. And it's a cottage, but it's nicer than my childhood home. Like, it's that kind of thing. So come to the, it's City Slickers. Come to the ranch. You can look outside and be like, horses live out there. And then proceed to just, you know, use a fully stainless steel kitchen to make your food. So yeah, so very modern, very, very plush. The record player is extraordinarily expensive. As a man who I assume, and I'm assuming this from modern times, but correct me if I'm wrong. I assume Everett's kind of a, like, where actually, what is Everett's living situation when he was still living? Like, how do you imagine his place and his lifestyle?
Probably had an apartment in the city. I haven't thought of him as having a guy with a lot of hobbies outside of work. I feel like that's part of what made him like a good detective was just that he didn't have a lot of things that he was also passionate about. It's like the work was one of his major passions. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So I think it might have been like a bachelor pad kind of apartment.
Sure. Yep. That makes sense.
Sort of a minimalist kind of
yeah, so it's a functional setup. A functional space for a human to exist, but not a home.
I think home enough in that, like, there's maybe some pictures of like him and Grimm or something like that as like old buddies.
Oh, okay.
And stuff like that.
Great.
Like,
so it's not like so it's you're not,
like
not...
Like you're a not a serial killer kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah.
Like
I was going to say, you're not Jonathan Groff from Mindhunter or Raiden from MGS2, where it's like, I kicked open your door and there was nothing. Right.
It's casually lived in. Clearly, he doesn't spend a lot of time there, but he's brought memories and trophies.
Sure. Yeah. Okay.
From work. But it's always kind of work-centric.
Awesome. Yeah, but it's still like a... It's a warmer... It's not a cold place. It's not a cold,
He's
stark
probably got
place.
An office in this place. Or, like, the living room has been, like, converted into an office.
Sure.
Kind
okay.
of thing.
Awesome. So, like, classic PI, lived-in space.
Yeah.
Okay. Wicked. Despite being on the force, it's still that same sense of, like, this is... Like, I go home to think. So, wicked. Mm-hmm. So, this space seems huge. Like, I'm guessing this living room is probably most of the size of your apartment.
Oh, usually.
Like, it's a big space. What you're struck by, though, is the record player seems very, very modern. It's got a digital display. It's clearly one of those, like, weird kind of post-death of vinyl players where it's like, we all thought it was done, and now cool new ones exist. But the record is ancient. Like, it is... The label is faded. It's a little bit warped, obviously, from sort of time and use. You heard the warble from outside, but as you look, like, this thing, it looks like a relic from the 60s. A very well-traveled thing. And you notice that even though there are a number of very, like, there's, like, Daft Punk and, like, the score from a video game and a bunch of other, like, very fancy modern vinyl records and a bunch of classics that were clearly reprints, in a line, they've been undisturbed. There's actually a leather bag leaning against them. That seems to have a bunch of just, like, very worn, kind of tattered vinyl sleeves in it. And as you kind of, like, peek in, you can see there are a number of these records, and all of them have, like, cartoon cowboys on the front, or, like, the classic, like, puffy shirt, silk, like, riding on a horse with a guitar. But this bag is well-traveled, and you get the sense that it was clearly brought in and not part of the... not part of the arrangement. Can you roll me an investigation and... Oh, sorry, we don't have investigation in this one. So many games. Oh, no, we do. Investigation and wits, please. I'm just going to just hand this one to you. This is a many dot check for old...
I think I recall doing this last time and really messing up. Okay, so that's one success, and let me roll here. Eight dice, one of them was a success.
Okay. You vaguely recall that you're investigating your case.
Oh, yeah.
I'm on a case.
I'm on a case. I'm not a burglar.
Yeah, you do a full L.A. Noire pickup and, like, rotate of the item, and then you just put it down. You don't gain any insight from it.
Well, shit. Is there any other evidence of things that look out of place in this extremely modern-looking home? Does anything look like it's sort of an object out of time?
Not in the living room. However, if we're kind of doing, having, again, just played a bunch of The Witcher, Geralt always gives such good summations. If you're, let's put this together, ing this, the fact that there's drinks out here and music on suggests that he clearly brought them in and at least to some extent entertained them and wined and dined them. There was clearly some element of, what's the word I'm looking for? Artifice and performance here. That said, it seems pretty clear that not much time was spent here. So that suggests to you as an investigator two things. One, your odds of finding this other person are good. But two, you don't quite know how that other person could end up outside, this being the case.
Yeah.
Because
does this place appear to have a basement, or is it a...
100%. So, okay. From where you're standing, there is... back at the sort of entry hallway, there is a set of stairs leading to the second floor, which is where you suspect the bedrooms are. There's probably a study of some sort up there. But you could see windows, just kind of those classic, beautiful little circular windows with the sort of cross frame in them. But beyond this living room, there's a very, as I said, stainless steel, hyper-modern kitchen. And from there, you can see there are stairs. Like, as you kind of peek your head around the corner, you can see there are stairs leading down. Okay. The staircases are stacked. So, like, the one that leads up, there's a separate one that leads down. It's not like a pantry. It's likely a fully furnished basement. And from your understanding of places like this that you've seen kind of going to friends' houses, honestly, it's not outside the realm that Harvey might have lived or his brother might have had a place like this that you guys went occasionally. The odds of the downstairs being a fully furnished kind of, like, lounge and hangout space are pretty high.
Okay. In that case, I want to check out the basement.
Okay. So, as you make your way into the kitchen, you notice that, there are some, like, light food, like, I was gonna say food and beverage, but the beverage is already taken care of. Charcuterie is the wrong term, but there's some, like, appetizer type stuff that's been laid out, that matches kind of what you saw in the other room. All, as you see the kitchen, all very hastily put together. It's the best parallel for this is probably overeager real estate agent. So, like, I took crackers and a block of cheese and I quickly cut up that cheese and then I arranged it nicely so it seems like I put a lot of effort into this, but clearly this was a slapdash kind of thing. But more concerningly for you, you notice that all of the knives in the knife rack are missing.
I'll draw out my pistol.
Cool. You going with your personal gun or your service weapon? I think we'd established the revolver is yours, the 9mm is
yours. Yeah, we'll go with my revolver, my personal one.
Yeah, all right. So can you roll me a stealth check, please, as you make your way towards the stairs?
Four dice. Two successes. A little better.
Yeah, all right. So you begin making your way down the stairs. They're carpeted, so your footsteps are actually nicely muffled.
Mm-hmm.
As you start making your way down the stairs, you can actually hear the sounds of a Looney Tunes cartoon. And you can very clearly hear Yosemite Sam.
Mm-hmm.
And then you hear a loud cry of pain.
Coming from the basement.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm just trying to think what I know about these kinds of crimes, it appears that it's been perpetrated by one person and not a group of people?
From everything you know about this guy's MO, what he's doing would have to be one person because there's... Well, actually, there's no clear evidence that it's just one person, but the one thing that would lead you to think it probably is the fact that it's so easy to just disappear if you're one person.
Okay. So I'm going to run down the stairs then.
Okay, cool. So you book it down the stairs. You find yourself in a bit of a labyrinthine? Nah. I've seen it written a bunch, and I know what it sounds like in my head, but I've never had to say it out loud before. Not great. A labyrinthine space, because it is a fully fucking furnished basement. So there are actually hallways and rooms down here. So you run downstairs. Yeah. You can see it's not a lot of hallways, but it's kind of like you can go south, you can go north. East and west, you can see like a bathroom with the door open. You can see a laundry room that's just like a very small kind of stacked machine deal. Mm-hmm. But there's clearly a room to the south and there's clearly a room to the north.
Are there lights on in either of the two rooms that I can see?
The lights are on everywhere down here. Hmm. It's fully lit.
Then let's just make a choice and run south.
South? Okay. Can you please roll me an awareness and wits?
Awareness is 3. Wits is 4. One, two, three, four, five, six, seven. Ooh, 2 successes and 1 crit fail on the hunger die.
Oh, that's not good because you needed 3 successes to win. So that is, in fact, a, say it with me now, messy failure. It's a bestial failure.
I was
going to
say, yeah, it's a bestial failure. We don't
I'm sorry, I got really excited about a messy success. Yeah, I know. For what it's worth, Miles was over the camera here as I said that and was also ready to yell it. We all whiffed it. So everyone's disappointed. Happy Wednesday. okay, wicked. So you tear forward, unfortunately missing the sound of the door at the top of the stairs behind you clicking closed. You rush forward as you hear someone just yell, "Is that what you think we're all like?" And then a scream, and you boot the door open to see a massive man wearing a tremendously dumb fake big red mustache and a giant hat just slash across someone who's tied to a chair who screams kind of through their through the handkerchief that's been tied around their face. Because you rolled a bestial failure, this is a full-on Max Payne. Like, you just boot the door in and leap. Something I'm fascinated about with these untold messy successy prequel episodes is exploring kind of what the behavior of the mortals were pre-Kindred that is reflected in their Kindred state. So, based on what happened to you in the police station and kind of when you went bestial for the first time, I'm curious what you think Mortal Everett's bestial state is. Is it Max Payne, I jump in firing? Is it, I don't know, police brutality? What do you think that looks like?
I think it's forgetting to identify himself as a police officer, which is like, for his casework, assuming he survives this, is terrible. Like, he's in a lot of trouble already. And so I think booting this door open and then just raising his weapon without properly identifying himself is likely how his bestial.
Fantastic. Do you yell anything or do you open fire?
Let's double down and say he doesn't yell anything. He just opens fire. He just shoots the guy.
All right. So I'm going to roll for Mr. Darlington, a.k.a. Mr. Sam, to see if he can get out of the way of your shot. You get to roll so rarely in this game. It's always interesting. Oh, wow. That is an interesting bag of garbage. all right. So I rolled two successes, two failures. But I got double ones. Tyler, go ahead and roll, please, a firearms. That's a thing, right? Oh,
boy.
Yeah, firearms and we're going to say, well, you're raging. So composure still, though, I think. It's you might be getting too old for this shit, but you still have years of training. So I think it's still like angry sniper, if that makes any sense.
This is a good roll. One, two, three, four successes with another critical fail on the hunger die. Another one.
All right. All right. All right. Cool. So you open up and you snap two quick shots off. Your revolver roars in this small space. You're definitely in like, this is clearly the like man cave lounge space. So there's like a massive wall sized TV that's showing Looney Tune cartoons of Yosemite Sam. The victim is tied to a chair in the middle. Sam's been dancing around them with the knife. Very Reservoir Dogs, but like if done by an idiot. So you rush in and just like pow pow, two like massive shots roar through the space. You blast them square in the chest. Like these are kill shots. You see him stumble backward and flip over the couch. Just as Yosemite Sam's yelling, "Oh, jeez, Jehoshaphat!" which you find ironic, given that you just capped the man.
Yeah.
You have a brief moment to consider what you just did, but here's my question. Knowing that there's someone tied up and bleeding, do you think you would actually wrestle with, like...
No.
No, great, okay.
Not in this moment, no.
All right, so you rush forward to the victim. You can see he's just like a... like a traditional Abercrombie and Finch kind of guy, like, you know, just very blonde, clean cut.
Dude bro, kind of?
Very much a dude bro.
Okay.
Perhaps why the damn tequilis went down so fast upstairs. But yeah, dude bro who's clearly on like a I'm seeing America tour. And his eyes are wide and, you know, he's impeccably shaped abs and chest are like just a mess of cuts. What's weird though is even as you're rushing up to untie him, these don't look like the kind of wounds that have killed the other people. Like to drain someone of all of their blood like this would take
forever.
Hmm. But you rush up you start like untying him. He's clearly kind of drunk and possibly drugged, so he's not tied. You know, it's not like a master, like, I must stop this. Like, James Bond can't escape. It's like, I've got a drunk dude, bro. He's right. Not going anywhere. He had four crackers and a full bottle of tequila. you manage to, you start untying his bonds when you hear a hiss behind you. And as you turn, you see the stash, the mustache now fallen away, staggering to his feet, and even though he's got bloody wounds on his chest from, again, a revolver with enough kick to probably drop a regular sumbitch, yeah. This particular sumbitch is standing back up, and to kind of your horror, he bears fangs at you. And there is a part of your brain that, I mean, you can tell me whether it sounds it or not. I think you the idea of vampires definitely crossed your mind. Here's my question to you that I think is a pretty interesting one. Had Everett observed enough evidence at this point that he was actually starting to believe that vampires might be a thing? Or did he think this was a unique serial killer pathology? This is one of those questions that really has no bearing on the greater arc of the series, but yeah. I'm fascinated.
I think because of the way we outlined his backstory of him, like, figuring it out by trying to solve these murders, I think, yes, the theory was, first of all, like, just dismissed outright as, like, foolishness. And then with each case that he was kind of observing, it kept coming back and coming back and coming back. And now it's, like, seeing the fangs here. It's like, damn,
It was vampires.
Great. All right. That's where I was hoping you were going to go. I just didn't want to put it in your mouth. amazing. So, yeah, the fangs hit, and unlike, scared pedestrians in the background of a Buffy scene, you're one of the Buffy-adjacent people who's like, fucking of course it is. It's that dude at the end of the remake of Dawn of the Dead who's just like, fucking of course. he bears his fangs. What do you do?
I'm going to try and shoot him in the head.
All right, go ahead and roll them bones.
And that's, we're doing firearms and composure still?
Because you're, because you aren't actually surprised by the teeth, you can go ahead and have your composure. If you were, might have been wits, because it's just like, oh god. But if you're like, fucking of course.
That's only one success and a critical fail on another die.
Great. So you pull your pistol up. He begins to faster than you would think possible, hands crunch through the back of the couch, leaps up into the air, is coming down on you. You pull up your revolver, aim it squarely at this monster. And then all of a sudden you're hit in the back of the head with a blunt object so hard. And you black out. For a moment, as your brain kind of desperately tries to de-scramble itself, you are convinced that either you're dead or that maybe your brain just skipped a frame and this thing got you. And I think I think it was when Harvey retired was probably around the time you decided that if this case killed you, but you were able to solve it, that would be a worthwhile trade. So this isn't like a, this isn't an unexpected result, but you're a little bit salty that you didn't solve the case.
Mm-hmm. Or that I did and I died.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's a real bummer to, you know, it'd be like you get the classic parlor room Poirot reveal, but then like you're like, really, you see, I first understood, and then someone just caps you, and you're like, oh, yeah. Fuck, I was, right, should have just called the cops. You think for a moment that you're gone, and that you're done, and that that's it. And then you start to thrash a bit, and you feel confined, and you suddenly realize that anything that's this uncomfortable couldn't possibly be death, and you realize as you start to get feeling back in your arms and legs that you're actually tied up, but like from sort of like your legs are bound, your arms are bound, you're in complete darkness. And even though you can squirm a bit, you can feel the pull of fabric. For some reason you have the taste of dirt in your mouth. And when you try and open your eyes, immediately you just have to like blink grit out of them. You feel odd, but you're not sure why.
I'm sorry, what are my immediate surroundings?
You're in complete darkness. And every time you move, you can feel kind of the... Think like... you can feel resistance every time you move, but like your arms and legs are bound tightly to your body. You're laying straight out. So you're laying down on the ground. Mm-hmm. Your arms and legs are bound. As seems to be, you're like you can feel your arms bound to your chest. There's complete darkness. You can taste dirt. You can't open your eyes. And every time you move, you can feel the resistance of cords and fabric.
I thought for a second I was being buried alive, but it sounds like I've been tied to something.
If,
or just tied up on the ground.
Well, yeah, you can feel that you're on the ground, tied up. I think the closest parallel you would have as an actual sort of human experience would be like you were in a super, super tight sleeping bag. Like it's that kind of sensation where you're just like, you can still move a bit, but you're restrained. you're not tied to anything. Like if you shuffle back and forth, mm-hmm. there is room on either side of you. You don't seem to be restrained to anything. You're just tied up like a bundle of sticks.
Right. And I can't see anything because there's like dirt and grit in my eyes.
Yeah. Every time you open your eyes, they're just, it's dirt town, USA. Oh, population, God, your awful. Eyes. Oh, it's very unpleasant. Yeah.
So I can't really move. I can roll, but I can't see where I'm going. What do I hear?
You hear a little bit like if you were to wear noise canceling headphones or just cup your ears. You can hear.
Man. So I've just been completely denied.
Well, like you can hear. I will say you can hear deafened sounds, but okay. It's in that weird hollow way where if you have something kind of covering your ears, you can hear sound, but it's very muffled.
And can I speak?
If you open your mouth, you get dirt. But if you want to try and fight your way out of this, you've got dexterity, you've got strength.
The same for me.
This is probably... Let's do strength. All right. I'm going to say this is likely an athletics check. Or if you want to try and settle into... If you want to like use your Witcher senses or your detective vision, or I guess Lara Croft's survival vision... you can also try and just calm, like, settle down, roll a check to see if you can figure out more about your circumstance, or you can try and fight your way out. It's up to you.
I think if I can't see, can't hear, I'm going to try and break out of my bonds yep. so that I can reach up to my face.
Entirely fair.
So this is a strength check with a...
Athletics.
Yes. One regular success, and then a messy successy, because I've got a crit success and then a crit success on the hunger die as well.
Oh, Tyler. You know, you got us that dope picture of the entire Dum Dums band for Christmas as a gift, but you've given me no greater gift than that messy successy. Fuck. All right. Great. Thank you. So you burst out of these with a strength you didn't know you had, given how constrained you are. And as you burst out of your restraints, you can just it sounds like the sound of like almost a tarp tearing. Okay. And as you break out of them, the sort of dirt and soil falls away from you, and you can see that you were literally wrapped in a tarp, and some reason you were packed in with dirt. And as you sit up sputtering, you look around and you realize you're still in this basement, but it's been fully Dexter kill roomed. Everything has been lined in plastic. And as you look around, to your shock, you can see that hooks have been drilled into the ceiling. Jesus. And hanging from those hooks are the tourist, douche bro tourist, and... Yosemite Sam.
Oh, he's up there too.
Both of them are hanging kind of from their hands in classic like mobsters in a off a meat hook kind of way.
Sure, yeah, yeah.
And both of them seem dopey but aware.
Okay.
And as you come to, you actually see there's a you can hear a woman laughing. Kind of over your shoulder, and as you turn, you can see just like a perfectly pulled, like very tight bun, and the silhouette, sort of like gray hair, a perfectly cut, at least from the back, suit, and a curl of cigarette smoke, and you hear a throaty voice, just laugh and say, "Oh, Bugs, you truly are the world's biggest cunt." And then a deep pull on what you're now suspecting, based on how much smoke is coming out, might be a cigar. And then just a large puff of smoke. And then kind of as you struggle up, what do you say?
I think now, for whatever reason, I'm like, police.
Don't move.
You don't have a gun, but yes.
Finger gun.
Yeah, finger gun. The woman, also for the record, that messy successy is still hanging. That's a hold moving forward.
I figured because that wasn't bad enough.
Good. Glad we're on the same page here.
And the story moves forward.
So, yeah, there's no consequence. You're fine. Everyone lived happily ever after. You solved the case. You retired. The rest of the show was a dream.
The messy part was that I created a time paradox.
Yeah, yeah. The rest of Blood and Syrup is just you staring into a snow globe. just Saint Else wearing it. So she kind of turns over her shoulder, and you see just like a full on like Maggie Smith type, with a cigar just clenched in her teeth, and you can tell that she's wearing makeup, but it seems oddly off. The colors don't quite match her pallid skin tone. And I think given kind of your now that you're thinking, now you're thinking with vampire, it looks almost to you like someone who is doing something out of habit, not out of necessity. Okay. So it would match a living person's skin tone. It doesn't match hers.
She hasn't updated her palette for her new
No, not at all. And she turns and she says, "Ah, Everett, darling. So glad you've awoken and decided to join us. I'm sorry, this must all be very confusing for you. One moment, let me pause the Looney Tunes." Oh, they truly are classics. She puts the cigar between her lips and just like holds up her remote and clicks it off. And then stands, and you can see she's wearing like a almost like a classic. Jesus, what is the name I'm looking for here? It's an MLM where they give you Cadillacs. Not Mary Kay, but it's in that ballpark. Just like a pink, like a classy ass pink, like jacket over pencil skirt. Yeah. Anyway, get at me. MLM internet. She stands up and kind of through that kind of classic creepy glow of the smoke of the projector, you first lay eyes on Ellen Fugues.
Ellen Fugues.
She says, "Well, first and foremost, darling, I think I should warn you about something. You're probably not police anymore." And then she runs a thumb across her lip and you realize it's not makeup, but blood. And your hand naturally finds its way to your neck. Yep. And there's no blood there anymore, but you can't find a pulse.
Oh. My guns are gone? My second piece is also gone? Yeah, okay.
So is your coat. You're not, like, in a detective coat in a bag.
Okay.
But you're still wearing your clothes otherwise. You also notice that you aren't wounded in any way. There's no, like... When he jumped over with, like, clawed fingers, you were kind of expecting if you woke up, you'd be shredded. Yeah. But there are no wounds on you other than you being kind of covered in dirt.
I'm going to do two things kind of simultaneously. Mm-hmm. I want to look around the room, look for A, a weapon, B, an exit.
Mm-hmm.
But also I want to talk to... Ellen. I don't know that her name is Ellen. I basically just want to distract her with talking while I kind of try and figure out my situation.
Cool.
So I'll say, "So what happens now, Miss
Fugues? Ellen Fugues, darling."
Uh-huh. "And why is it that I'm not a police officer anymore? And how do you know my name?"
"Everett, darling, I've been keeping an eye on you for some time. You see, you're actually quite good at detecting. A master of detecting. You found us out. That is something that we desperately try not to let people like you figure out. But you caught us. You caught the vampires. You solved the case. Bravo."
I still, like, kind of can't believe it.
Yeah, she looks at you, she's like, "I know," and she takes the cigar out, she's like, "We've taken to calling ourselves kindred over the years as though that would help, but truly it is ridiculous, isn't it? vampires.
So, so what happens now? Looks like you were fixing to kill me.
Oh, quite the opposite, darling. I mean, I did, but you're fine now. You got better. And as you go to reach for a weapon, like you see like various like your tchotchkes like and stuff,
hook that hadn't been put up on the wall yet or something.
I was gonna say more like a heavy glass, like you know those like long, weird, like almost canoe shaped like glass things that just exist to put other things on. It's like one of those. Yeah. It's green and purple and kind of kooky, and there's bubbles in it because it's unique. You go to grab that. It looks like it could be a decent cudgel at least. But as you step forward, your vision blurs and you can't quite focus and you're just so fucking hungry and exhausted. And it's just, it hits you in a wave and it's unlike anything you've ever experienced. So she says, listen, Detective Fry, Everett, we should be on a first name basis after all. We noticed that you'd picked up our trail, and I was hopeful that you would just, you know, fuck off and die. But instead, you discovered a rogue element of ours. And she gestures kind of very grandly to the stash. She says, and it would seem that you put together a lot of pieces. And here's the thing, darling, that's actually quite useful to us. So we dispensed with your mortal bullshit and made you something a little bit more useful to us. So what happens next is I need to see if you're what I think you are. So, Everett. And she walks past you, and again, you're just trying to grab that fucking weird, lovingly glass handcrafted club. Glass club. Yeah. She walks over and she puts a hand on each of the swinging people's backs. And she just says, you can be the most useful pawn in a tremendously powerful game of chess. And honestly, I think you'll get what you want from it. Or we can rebag you and put you in the ground. I think it's a pretty easy decision. But unfortunately, this is less up to your brain and more up to your state. So, a lot hangs on this next question, Everett Fry. But which of these two meals do you choose? So, this is all very fucked up to your brain.
Yeah, this is a lot to take.
But your mouth is throbbing and you still feel a little dazed and a little out of it. Mm-hmm. Like you're not fully within your senses. Your vision is kind of constantly blurring and coming back in. And you look at the two people who are hanging there. One, the person you came to save, an innocent victim who clearly got in over their head but seemingly has done absolutely nothing wrong. And a serial killer that you know is responsible for multiple deaths, seemingly has a weird hang up about Texas that you as a Texan kind of find offensive. Like you get why he's mad, but also maybe go fuck yourself. And you, sir, rolled a messy successy. So I don't think we need to belabor this. Your vision drifts in and out and you know it's wrong and it feels impossible. But almost like you're observing yourself, you stagger forward, bare your new fangs, and rip into the stash. What is your final thought before your teeth make contact?
Just, oh God, this is actually happening.
And then you taste vampiric blood for the first time, and oh, the blood of kindred. That goes down eyes real roll up into smooth. My head. Yep.
Yeah.
And Ellen just smiles and nods and she says, ah, very good. Good boy. Drink deep. And you don't remember much else of what happened that night. More importantly, when you open your eyes again, your eyes roll up into your head, You have dreams of ecstasy, of absolute, perfect, pure joy. But when you wake up, the last thing you remember is getting clocked in the back of the head. There's nothing there.
Oh.
All you remember is getting hit. You remember, you can hear Ellen's words echoing in your head. You have no memory of drinking the stash. You have no memory of making a choice. You have no memory. You just, you're aware of the information she gave you, but everything else is a blur. You wake up in a ditch, in a loosely wrapped version of your previous kind of pseudo sarcophagus.
Mm-hmm.
You find yourself in your coat. Your guns have been returned to you. And you find a note pinned to your sort of like your shirt. Mm-hmm. It has a phone number on it that says, there's a phone number under which it says, only call the call center in case of emergency. And then below it, it says, they're coming for you now. You'll be safe in Montreal.
Okay.
As you kind of struggle out of your weird, shitty pseudo-coffin and sit up in the ditch, you hear the sounds of something moving rapidly through the woods. Can you please roll me a... let's say a wits and awareness check, please.
That is... What is going on? That's two crit fails and... No, two crit fails and one success on the hunger die.
Sorry, bud.
Just noises out there.
Yeah, so you struggle to your feet. You hear noises, but you're not quite sure what they are. You see that you're in a ditch alongside a road. You're a ways out of town. And you can think just down the street, if you squint, improbably you see your car. And you realize that it's near the ranch, but this definitely isn't where you parked it. Someone has moved it here. That said, it's a bit of a ways away.
I'm going to start walking towards my car.
As you do so, suddenly you... feel, because you rolled very badly, a weight hit your back, and you're forced to the ground by a thin, kind of like almost goth rocker type guy, who just looks down at you, like sort of forces you face first into the ground. You hit the gravel, and he sniffs up your neck and into your hair, and he's just like, oh, yeah, you're going to make me real powerful. And he goes to sink his teeth into your neck. What do you do?
I'm lying face down.
Yeah, he's jumped onto your back and forced you down.
Okay.
He is much smaller than you, I should say. He's like a teenager.
I'm just going to roll over and swing an elbow up at his jaw.
All right, go ahead and roll me a melee and strength, please.
So strength is 2 and melee is... none. So here we go. 2 successes.
All right, fantastic. You crack him in the jaw.
The less I roll, the better.
He flies off of you. Again, you threw an elbow as strong as you know how to do it, but it seemed to be slightly more powerful. And he like sort of skitters off into the ditch. And then as you turn, you actually see shapes starting to emerge from the darkness. And all of them are rushing towards you. You see a woman seems to just be like, a standard businesswoman. She's wearing like regular like jeans and a blazer, comes like leaps over him. And you think you hear her yell, useless half-blood. And she starts rushing towards you, her eyes red. And you can see she's muttering something to herself.
I'm going to get up and try and outrun her to the car.
Sure.
I'm just trying to get to the car.
Roll me dexterity and athletics, please. And I'll roll for her.
Dex 2, athletics 2. Three successes.
Amazing. All right. She only got two. So you... Those are failures. She got none. As she jumps over, the teenager actually grabs her ankle, and she just full on face plants into the ground. but you can see just a mob of people rushing towards you. Gunshots start ringing out, you book it up to your car. You sort of throw open the door, get behind the wheel. You see a note tucked against the wheel that just says drive or die, and the keys are in the ignition.
I turn the ignition over and floor it.
Great. So the car roars to life. It's a pretty beaten up old vehicle, but happily it's sound. And as you kind of tear, you can feel the gravel kind of shoot out from under the tires, but soon enough you're underway, and behind you you can see kind of a mob of people chasing you. You can see a couple of like headlights start up, a motorcycle starts up, and you just start hauling ass north. As you drive, a phone starts ringing that isn't yours in your breast pocket.
I'll reach for it and I will like answer the call, but I won't speak.
Okay.
I'll just yeah.
So you hear Ellen on the other end. She's like, here's the deal, darling. You get exactly one battery charge off this, and then this line will never work again. I have some things to tell you, and it would behoove you to listen as best you can. What is happening to you right now, if you made it past the creatures, and based on the fact that someone answered the phone, my guess is that you did, you are being blood hunted. You won't understand this, but there are rules that I will explain over the next few hours that creatures like us must abide by. You are a vampire. You are kindred like us now, whether you like it or not. But I've got some tremendously good news for you, Everett Fry. I want you to hunt vampires. No more following cases, no more blind leads, no more incredibly beautiful, intelligent, and capable women such as myself covering up the necessary next step in your case. You are free to hunt the things you've always sought to hunt, as long as you follow our rules. You will hunger only... Sorry, go ahead.
I was just going to say, like, as she's saying this, I will... as she's, like, explaining this to me and, like, kind of, like, reframing my new, like, world, I will... run like a vampire motorcyclist, like off the road.
Sure, yeah, absolutely.
Sounds good.
Keep in mind, this is like full on, like Mad Max to the border. Yeah, amazing. Yeah. You crash a motorcycle, you see the person like careen off into the into the darkness. That's great. So she's like, "You will not hunger for the flesh of mortals. You will hunger for the flesh of your fellow kindred, which I must admit is a big no-no." In our culture, there's a thing known as the masquerade that you must follow. I will explain those rules shortly. What you need to know in the short term is this. You are of Clan Ventru. All other blood will taste of ash in your mouth, but the blood of vampires will taste delicious. This is the greatest sin a vampire can commit. But after all, you're not really a vampire, are you, Everett? You're Detective Everett Fry, Hunter of Darkness. So just... think of it as doing your mortal kin a favor. That said, our other companions don't look so kindly on it, hence why you're being hunted now. You will never return to Texas, and you will be a pariah. Except
you,
in the north.
You turn me into can't believe I'm saying this, a vampire.
You can say kindred instead if it makes you feel better, darling. Honestly,
that's
it doesn't.
Somehow worse.
I agree.
You turn me. You feed me a vampire. And what, now I'm just on the run because of it? Did you tell them?
Oh, don't worry, darling. You've never fed on vampiric flesh. You're fine. And your brain kind of like your vision blurs a bit and you're having a real hard time. You feel like you did, but maybe you didn't. Maybe you just imagined that. That might not have happened.
Right, okay. That's right. Sorry, you did tell me that
it's all good. You were drugged, as we will determine soon, at the time. But yes, she says, yes, look, Everett, you were like a hound with a scent. You were tracking us down and interfering with our operations at every turn. I had two options. I could kill you, or I could let you keep doing it, just do it for me. And I must say, as someone who has spent a long time living, well, living, relatively, has had a lot of tremendously dissatisfying sexual encounters, I gotta tell you, doing it for yourself is always better. So, do it for yourself, Everett. Go hunt the vampires you were hunting anyway. I knew you wouldn't stop, and now you can't. So do it for me, and do it for you.
And what are you getting out of this, me hunting and killing other vampires?
Everett, darling, I'm not asking you to kill every vampire, just the ones who are a bit of a problem. We're sending you to a place in Canada, of all places, known as Montreal. It's a very English-French city. You may have heard of poutine, some such. Anyway, it's a national dish. It's French fries and garbage, as I understand it. But then again, I haven't eaten in 200 years, so who am I to talk? Anyway, you will be safe there, but also our interests, the interests of the organization I represent, the Camarilla, are desperately underserved there. There are a lot of criminals there, Everett, that I need sorted, and you can sort them for me. That's what you do, right?
That's what I did. I don't know what I'd do anymore.
I'm telling you, as your sire, that's what you do.
Sire?
Yes, I made you. You kind of belong to me now. Sorry, darling, it's a bit of a bum rap, but trust me, there are much worse assholes out there than me.
How literal is that sire to sired connection? Do I feel compelled to obey her?
To some extent, it's more of a... like, there is definitely a compulsion there, because her... okay. Essentially, if we're thinking this in viral infection terms, her virus is what infected you. So there is some compulsion there. It's not a full-on, like, do this and you must obey. But there is, like, a genetic compulsion. That said, in the Masquerade universe, the World of Darkness universe, it's... a lot of it is imposed by the Camarilla. This is actually one of the reasons why the Anarchs are anti-Camarilla, because it's like, theoretically, and like Everett still I don't think knows this in-game, but the idea is, if you're following the rules of the Camarilla, you need to get permission from the prince of whatever place you are to make a new vampire. Like, making kindred is not like a cool willy-nilly, we can just do this. It's like, no, this is like, that's like a job. It's like working for Google. Like, we're going to ask you a bunch of dumb questions and make you do a bunch of dumb shit, which is part of the reason why the Sabbat and the Anarchs are such a pain in the ass for the Masquerade, and why the Children of Batista are such a Batista are such a problem, because they're just unauthorized vampires running around doing shit. So by siring you, she A, must have got permission from someone, and B, is now like legally responsible for everything you do.
I see.
So if you go on a killing spree and break the Masquerade, it falls back on her. Like, you'll get killed, but then she has to pay for it. So, it's not a full-on mental compulsion, but there is... you can
certainly a social...
you can, but also, like, a little bit, because it is her genus that's kind of... like, you're of her dynasty now. There's a bit of a compulsion to follow it. Also, I think, based on the amount of heat that's chasing you out of town, there's not a lot of options. Like, if these people...
no, definitely not.
If these people carry on, you're done. You can hold them off for a bit. But, needless to say, when you do cross the border, they all turn back. And that's the border out of Texas. That's not, like, out of the U.S., just out of Texas. And you begin a very long drive north. And along the way, you're informed of some unfortunate truths. That you are kindred, that sunlight will cause a painful allergic reaction, that you work for the Camarilla, that there's such a thing as the Masquerade. But if you'll remember, when we started this game, Everett didn't know a lot of this.
Yeah.
Partially because, like, Tyler as player didn't know a lot of this.
I don't know this.
She's info dumping on you, and you're watching every so often the battery on your phone run low. And you know that when that battery is done, that will be the end of your...
like connection.
Connection to... for now. Like, you still have this number you can call, but, like, that's as much information as she can give you. So you take a lot of it in, but you're also, like, dealing with a lot of things. And I think you probably stubbornly tried...
I woke up in a ditch this evening.
After a full day of serial killer hunting. You also can't quite remember what happened. You feel like the stash has been dealt with, but you don't quite remember. Mm. I think on the first day you attempt to drive during the day, and the pain is too intense, and that's the first time you kind of pull over and hide kind of under your coat for the night. And after that, you pick up a bunch of newspapers and begin your habitual, like, papering over of your car. Mm-hmm. It isn't until the third day that you're searching for something in your glove box to find a bloody mustache. And on the fifth day is when you find...
It's in my glove box. That's nasty, Ellen. That's fucking nasty.
On the fifth day, you find a worn leather case in your trunk as you go for your spare tire, full of vinyl records. But you still can't quite remember, other than you feel like business is finished somehow. That somehow it's complete. And then finally, after a few days, you reach the border to Canada. Do you think Everett's ever been to Canada?
Maybe to Niagara Falls, but not really visiting the great nation of Canada.
So, a lot has changed for you very quickly. The good news is, you know, Harvey is in Montreal. You remember that he moved up there, and you have a sinking suspicion that that's part of the reason you're being sent there. Unfortunately, if Ellen knows to send you there because he's there, it also means she knows he's there.
Yeah.
There was a lot of vaguely veiled threats in a lot of what she was saying. But as you reach the border, you realize that this is really, in some ways, the true delineation between your past life and your future life. As you're stuck in the horrible, horrible traffic that all border crossings consist of, you consider your apartment, you consider all the work you left undone there, which weirdly you managed to solve.
I think one thing I would like to do, maybe before hitting the border, is to mail this bloody mustache and this brown leather bag of records to my police station. With, like, an anonymous note, kind of being like, at least, like, I can solve the case kind of posthumously if this is the end of my life as a mortal detective.
So you stop at, like, one of those weird stations that always seems to exist just before border crossings. That's like, get rid of your illegal shit here, mail it home. you mail that back. You do, you can see on a TV screen playing in kind of like one of the big waiting rooms outside the duty free, a blonde douche bro kind of guy who's just like, I don't remember what happened, but I gotta tell you, I don't make assumptions about people from Texas. That can be very bad. I wish Jeremy was here too, but you know, a hero saved us. I don't know who it was. And I know this sounds crazy, but, like, that crazy guy, he was going to kill us. And I don't know how I escaped, but, like, wherever you are, you're a good person. Thank you. Also, go Michigan State! and then the camera cuts to something else. But as you mail this stuff back, you feel a real sense of satisfaction having closed, at least saved who you intended to save, and having to some extent closed the case.
Mm-hmm.
And ultimately, Ellen has given you a life that isn't outside the realm of what you wanted. But it occurs to you, you have absolutely no idea how you eat.
Yeah.
And with that, you kind of get back in the car and continue your border crossing. On your way to a contact somewhere in Montreal. Meanwhile, back at your local police station, the desk sergeant opens a package with a bloodied mustache and a note and the records, and sort of calls the chief over. And sure enough, in checking the MO of the stash killer, there did seem to be details of single perpetrator. Clearly this happened, although usually both victims were found drained of blood. And the one thing that doesn't make sense from the crime scene is that there was a different body elsewhere. If Everett were to look back at the case now, with all the details in hand, he would probably realize that Ellen had killed the other tourist and stashed their body in order to set up her own game. Mm-hmm. But for the cops back home, it's well enough to know that the case has been solved. And when 3 days later, far behind the ranch, they find a sort of gloopy pile of human remains. They fear that something much worse than the stash found him and did something awful to him.
Hmm.
But no one sheds a tear for him because, after all, just another serial killer off the streets. Ellen Fugues, meanwhile, is on a very important phone call. She is smoking a cigar. There are two chained humans at her feet that she's frequently having to draw on in order to keep rousing the blood enough to actually be able to smoke the cigar without vomiting. But it's a habit she enjoys, so it's a price she's willing for them to pay. She says, yes, darling, yes, it worked tremendously well. He has no memory of it, but it's good. He did turn out to be a diabolist after all, and honestly, it made him more powerful than I'd intended. He would have been one of those terrible caitiffs otherwise, just able to walk in the sun, but completely useless. So, yes, he believes himself to be Ventru, and I think we'll let him continue to have that. But he should serve our purposes quite well in Montreal. And then she frowns and she says, yes, no, the drac worked perfectly, darling. It drives them into a frenzy. They're quite susceptible. It will be very easy to control anyone who is dosed heavily enough with it. As I said, he drained a vampire dry and has no memory of it. It's delightful. And then she nods and her face falls and she says, well, wait, if he's dead, then who is Everett going to speak to? If there's no Camarilla left in Quebec, then what? Yes, sir, I trust you. Well, okay. Okay, bye. she hangs up, takes a puff, and says, well, this is simply beyond me, but I must determine how the Bunny of Seville ends. And then taking a big drag off the chained mortal at her feet, Ellen Fugues puts her feet up on the other one, presses play, and enjoys learning more about opera as Everett Fry drives deep into the woods to go and meet his destiny.
This episode of Blood and Syrup features the voices of Ryan LaPlante at The Ryan LaPlante on Twitter, Tyler Hewitt at Tyler_Hewitt on Twitter, and Megan Miles at Maggie Miles on Twitter, featuring storyteller Tom McGee at McGeeTD on Twitter. This episode was edited by Tom McGee, and all of Dum Dums and Dice's art is by Decapitated Markers at Decapitated Marker on Twitter. That's MRKR. Our theme songs are What's Really Going On Right Now by Chase Allen Willis, and Traffic by Kai Engel, and all our ads use tracks No Control and Chiefs by Jazzar, J-A-H-Z-Z-A-R. All of their music is available on freemusicarchive.org. When it comes to Dumb Dumbs and Dice, you can visit our website at dumdumdice.com. Our Twitter and Instagram are at dumdumdice and on Facebook at facebook.com/dumdumdice. You can also get merchandise at redbubble.com/people/dumdumdice, and you can join our Patreon of Darkness, patreon.com/dumdumdice. That's DUMBDUMBDICE. Sleep well, children of the night. Spooky.
Dum Dums and Dice has to give a special thank you to the supreme beings of our Patreon at this time. Christian Manicola, Long Long, The Half-Blind Prophet, James Cuellar, DM Rob, Christopher Little, Joshua White, Olin Anderson, Sue One, and Jill and Noel LaPlante. If you want your name to be added to this list, you can join our Patreon too at patreon.com/dumdumdice. Thanks to them, and a little bit of thanks to you.
The Fable and Folly Network, where fiction producers flourish.